In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Monday, January 28, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Focusing today on telework in light of the situation that we had today and last week, a number of weather-related events that involved potential telework issues and other work-life issues. And talking today to Mika Cross, the Work-Life and Wellness Program Manager at the Department of Agriculture. Mika, it's great to have you in studio. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
There is a number of things I want to talk to you about in the program today, but first explain to me what your portfolio includes. That's a pretty big business card there, and it sounds like it's pretty important to the operation of the agency from an HR perspective.
It is. The work-life and wellness portfolio at the Department of Agriculture includes a variety of flexible and supportive workplace programs for our employees to include flexible work schedules, telework, employee health and wellness, child care subsidy, resources and referrals, employee assistance, and a variety of other programs that really help support and engage the workforce at USDA.
Now, one of the things that I imagine is a challenge for not just your agency, but for your peers that do the same jobs at other agencies is tight budget times, demonstrating how it is that your programs are valuable to the employees at the agency. But the piece of it that I imagine is most valuable at your agency is the retention that you're able to demonstrate. People want to keep working at USDA because they have access to the kinds of things that you run. Is that the case?
Definitely. I think the strategic value in work-life and wellness programs across the federal government is, just as you mentioned, these are free and low-cost programs which really help to recruit a diverse and inclusive workforce, helps to retain and engage the tacit and organization knowledge that we have in place, and really inspire and engage our federal employees to do the best and better with less when we're asked to do so much more.
Now, you sent some material over, some analysis of the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. And one of the items that you wrote in here is feedback from the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey continues to be critical in identifying our agency's strengths and challenges. And the data that you've collected indicates that. Why is that data so valuable to you and in your team at the agency?
Well, right now at the Department of Agriculture, we are in the midst of what our secretary calls cultural transformation. And it really hinges on five different important areas to include professional development, customer outreach, customer service, engagement, productivity, and diversity and inclusion. And so the results of how we do on the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey are strategically aligned to the components of cultural transformation, which we measure each and every month. Secretary Vilsack ensures that we are keeping tally of how we're doing on those measures each and every month and puts them into a report called the Cultural Transformation Milestone and Metrics. And, of course, as we all know, what get measures gets done. And our senior leaders are absolutely held accountable for the progress that they're making in those different areas. What we've seen is a definite increase in the areas that are directly aligned to cultural transformation. So as an example, between our fiscal year 2011 and fiscal year 2012 results of the FedView survey in telework satisfaction, we increased 5 points and now are at a satisfaction level of 73, which is much higher than even the federal average.
I want to dig more into the telework aspect of what you're doing later on in the program, because that's been kind of a hard nut for some agencies to crack. But before we get away from these, the results of the survey, you've broken down the five highest percentage positive ratings and the challenges, the negative ratings, and all of these other pieces of information. We're going to link this up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But I was struck by the fact that your results seem to be fairly consistently just a touch above the agency-wide average, the government-wide average. What do you think that says about the efforts that you're making at USDA?
Well, it definitely states that we're having a positive impact. And, you know, slow progress is still progress. And we absolutely are making significant strides towards increasing employee satisfaction, increasing morale across the department. And ultimately, that leads to better engagement and productivity in our employees. And we're seeing that in other communication venues as well, outside of just the FedView survey. We have several communication mechanisms from which we communicate with our employees, and we're really trying to foster a culture that allows for interactive dialogue on some of these issues so that employees around the nation, well outside of the Beltway, feel as though they're a part of this change as well and that they can inspire change. So they're able to send us ideas and suggestions. And our top leadership, our chief human capital officer, as well as our senior leadership, actually responds and takes action on some of those issues. And employees can see, feel, and hear what the difference is to them.
And my sense is that it's not just the fact that maybe my particular issue wasn't responded to, just the idea of seeing that these ideas get paid attention to is tremendously valuable to the employees.
Absolutely. And we've had a lot of focus also and success with our labor management forum, which has really sparked strides towards making progress and, again, encouraging that interactive dialogue and allowing employees to take part in the change as well. And we're really seeing results based on that.
What are some of the most successful ways, logistically or mechanically, that the employees are able to communicate with leadership to keep that line of communication open?
We have an interactive online newsletter that's sent out from our Secretary of Agriculture each and every month to all employees. And we have feedback mechanisms through email addresses that are tailored to specific areas. So we have a worklife at USDA.gov and telework at and different areas where people can send in success stories, testimonials, even areas where they find resistance or challenges at the state level. And what we're able to do is really help and intervene at the policy and program area in my respective area and provide direct feedback or route them to the agency level leadership that can help affect change. And people see that, and then they tell stories about how it's made a difference. We also host working groups with employees. So this year in 2012, actually, we formed a nursing mothers work group across the department. And the majority of our folks are out in the states in rural America, you know, servicing the American public. We had over 2,000 employees reach out to us either via survey or email wanting to be a part of this and willing to tell stories from decades past of how nursing mothers programs and policies had positively affected them in the workplace when they were fighting forest fires in our national parks and that sort of thing. It really has significant impact.
What is the best result and maybe the biggest challenge in your view, out of looking at these viewpoint survey numbers, the data that you came up with?
So the best result, certainly I'd like to tout, is in telework. In fact, we increased more than 10,600 approved agreements in fiscal year 2012 alone, which resulted in now having more than 30% of our eligible workforce teleworking in any given calendar year, and an average of 24% in any given pay period. And did you ask about the challenges?
I would like to hear what you think the biggest one is, yes.
The challenges are that, you know, we have state-level offices and county-level offices, and they're very disparate outside of the National Capital Region, outside of headquarters. So it's really hard to help resonate the business case of why these programs and services are important in their particular fiefdoms, let's say. So really customizing the outreach and engaging them in what matters most to their constituents, to what they do for their missions each and every day, and how we can better customize these programs has really been a challenge. But we're overcoming that slowly but surely.
Mika Cross is my guest. She's the Work Life and Wellness Program Manager at the Agriculture Department. We're going to talk more about telework when the program continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
This is an urgent message for all individuals with extremely large credit card debt. No matter how much you owe on your credit cards, the company that has settled more debt than anyone in the U.S. could settle your debt too. While you make one low monthly program payment, you have the opportunity to hear how low your monthly program payment could be for free. This free information is available now simply by calling Freedom Debt Relief at 1-800-700-6518. I repeat, if you have extremely large credit card debt, you now have the ability to reduce your total debt and get one simple low monthly program payment. This could allow you to resolve your debt faster than you ever thought possible. But you should act quickly. Call Freedom Debt Relief now to learn how much you could save. 1-800-700-6518. Again, this life-changing information is available for free. To find out how much you may be able to save, call today. 1-800-700-6518. That's 1-800-700-6518. 1-800-700-6518.
Hey, honey.
Hi, Dad.
What you drawing?
It's our house. That's you.
Oh.
Me.
Huh?
Mom and Josh.
Wow.
Playing ball.
You are becoming quite the artist.
When you're a kid, you don't know that home ownership builds communities. That owning a home contributes to higher self-esteem and better test scores. You just know that home is where you play, grow, and learn. The National Association of Realtors wants you to know that home ownership matters to our families, our neighborhoods, and our country. Learn more at houselogic.com/homeownership.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time, but the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Al Bihar, Vice President and Senior Private Client Fiduciary Advisor at Wilmington Trust. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients across the country. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Tuesday's Federal Drive. The military has been working hard to improve its treatment of mental disorders suffered by combat veterans. We'll talk to the Navy captain who's trying to sort out what works and what doesn't. Plus, the GSA is trying a new technology-driven approach to online training and education. We'll hear from contractor Blackboard about the latest in electronic learning. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Mika Cross of the Agriculture Department, my guest. And this started initially the idea to have you come in here and talk to us, Mika, with our top three for 2013 series, and that's on federalnewsradio.com. And you had so much to say about what's going on that we decided to have you come in and do it this way instead of just a real short thing, and I'm glad we were able to do this. One of the things that you're writing on is a priority for telework at the agency this year. Is you write, using telework to transform the USDA workplace and drive efficiencies in accountability and performance management. And I think one of the things that we get into as people who cover the federal government and telework is we get siloed as people criticize the agencies for doing and forget that telework is a component of all of these other things, and performance management is the one that jumped out at me here. How do you see those two issues as being connected at USDA?
Well, telework really forces managers and leaders to have to assess employees based on the results of their work, their productivity, versus time and attendance and who's sitting right in front of them. And as we all know, you know, because you're physically present doesn't mean you're really working or putting forth the effort. And what we've seen also is that employees cite that autonomy in their work really results to higher levels of engagement and satisfaction with their work, which ultimately results in productivity with performance. And so we really see that as a strategic value with regards to linking telework and helping supervisors and managers manage in a flexible, modern, and adaptive workforce, one that we need to attract the new level of federal workers, retain the ones that we have, and really get the most bang for our buck with regards to intellectual capital.
There's a couple elements here that I think are interesting because they're thoughts that I have not heard a lot connected with the telework strategy. One of them is potential to save money because you're not giving people transit subsidies, which we're just seeing that the transit subsidy is actually going to go up $245 a month now. And so if you're not paying folks to, if they're not commuting, you don't need to pay them to commute. And there are just little bits and pieces here when we look at these things, when we really drill down into them, that I think maybe aren't obvious on first blush.
Absolutely. And that was our first target when we rolled out this aggressive new telework program commensurate with the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010. So December 2010, we really started focusing on how could we push this program into the next level and start seeing some return on investment. So we targeted transit subsidies. And what I did is I worked with Department of Transportation to pull our contract and see how many folks are we funding to get to work. And what we realized is that at the time, USDA was spending close to $17 million to fund a little over 10,000 federal workers to actually get to work. And what would that mean if we reduced it even just one day a pay period, which results in almost 2 days a month? And what kind of savings could we discover? So we did a cost summary, cost avoidance template. And what we found is that when we executed our FY11 contract with Department of Transportation, we saved more than $2 million, or, well, avoided spending $2 million on transit subsidies alone. This year, with regards to integrating telework eligibility and participation numbers, I believe we saved close to $8 million in cost avoidance when we executed our contract. That was not hard to do. It's a template that other federal agencies could easily adapt as well.
And the idea is, if you're sitting at your desk and you're thinking, well, if we don't pay MECA X number of dollars a month, it doesn't sound like a whole lot of money. And I think people tend to forget, both inside and outside government, how quickly it scales with the size of an agency of like the size of USDA.
Absolutely. And, you know, the cost savings comes in other ways as well. You know, pollutants in the environment, vehicle miles, and what happens when you are commuting long distances to and from. You know, there's more accidents that could happen, resulting in sick leave usage and such. And so there are a lot of other soft benefits associated with that with regards to cost savings, too, that one can realize when you think about implementing telework on a more widespread basis for those that are eligible.
Now, the concept of transforming the USDA workplace, that's not just a concept. There's a strategy behind that. Talk a little bit about the strategy and how you and your colleagues at the agency foresee the workplace looking differently at the end of 2013 or 5 years from now or whatever.
Well, certainly cultural transformation helps us to unearth other efficiencies with regards to solutions dealing with duplicative efforts in the administrative fields, in the support fields. And so we're looking at strategies for really finding ways to reduce office space, unused facilities, cost savings, and again, really just getting more for the dollar for the American taxpayer, but still providing the same level of service. And I know our secretary is completely dedicated to doing just that, getting ahead of the change and managing it. So, I mean, what does our future workplace look like? It's going to be representative of the American public. It's going to be diverse, inclusive of military veterans, people with disabilities and targeted disabilities, five generations of workers now, I think, that will be in the workplace, and one that I think will be more efficient and better enabled to serve the American public.
Now, you're right. Telework will help continue the conversation with both our middle-level managers and senior leaders for how to leverage best practices in performance management and leadership in a modern workplace. The middle-level managers have been getting a lot of criticism over the last several years as kind of the bump in the road when it comes to widespread deployment of telework. Have you seen that historically at your agency, and are you starting to see that resistance from the middle-level managers going away?
We absolutely have seen it just as across the entire federal government, and it's indicative in our employee viewpoint survey results that kind of that's where the issue lies. But what we've also seen over the past few years is that by opening the doors to having interactive dialogues and conversations and also showcasing successes from middle-level management, senior-level management who have adapted a flexible workplace environment, who have incorporated new telework program policies and initiatives and what it has meant for them with regards to being able to deliver their mission and inspire their employees, it's been amazing. And they help tell tell the story, in fact. So we launched a series of monthly online webinars last year called Let's Talk Telework. And it was completely interactive and online. And so folks across the country were able to dial in. And we had more than we could handle with regards to people who wanted to join in the conversation. But the beauty in that is that we had examples from all agencies throughout USDA of managers who were able to tell their stories on how they had to trust their employees and the results that they had. And that really has inspired others to kind of take the leap of faith and move out. I think that's what's helping to overcome that middle level management resistance.
Well, and I imagine too, as telework filters down or up, whichever direction, every agency's different, but as those middle-level managers see the benefits for their own jobs, I imagine that helps with some of the resistance too.
Absolutely. You know, finding spokesmodels of senior leaders who can also say, you know, I telework as well. And to give permission to those folks to feel as though they don't always have to be at work to do a good job is really important, because what we found is, especially in the surveys that we've launched, our supervisors and managers feel like they just have to be at work by virtue of the fact that they're a supervisor, and that's just simply not the case. So giving them permission and examples of other folks that have done it well, senior executives, even political appointees who by virtue of their work are pretty mobile anyway, really helps to kind of shift that culture.
One other point I want to ask you about this priority, right? Providing supervisors with the tools to effectively put in place and communicate expectations and objectives that are measurable and effective will continue to increase performance, productivity, and employee engagement. Those increases, do you see those in other forms than just we looked at the employee viewpoint survey results in the first segment? Do you see them other places where you are actually able to measure productivity? This much more work is getting done because of this effort that we've put into place?
I wish I could say yes. We haven't cracked that yet, but we hope to get there. I hope to put in place a way that we can measure even performance ratings commensurate with the levels of telework participation and also those who participate in flexible work schedules in general. It's really important data to pull, but we're not there yet, and we don't have a sophisticated system that would allow us to pull that consistently across the department yet.
Is it your sense that that information's there and it is just a pulling mechanism issue, or is it that you're still learning, strategizing how to collect the data in the first place?
I think it's likely a combination of both. And because of how the department is organized with different agencies and mission areas, we would need to kind of drill down and customize that specifically to those different varying missions and organizations.
All right. When we come back, I want to talk about COOP planning. That's been one of the most effective pushes for telework, and we'll talk about that when we come back with Mika Cross of the Agriculture Department on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Work in technology? The new career site PowerJobs.com is currently featuring senior-level technology positions from top companies like Accenture and Pioneering Evolution. Powered by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com is designed to connect Washington's top talent to top jobs in the region's influential industries. Visit PowerJobs.com today to start your job search. PowerJobs.com, finally, a career site made for you.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Agencies hope to consolidate 1,200 data centers by the end of 2015. Consolidating data centers is more than moving hardware. It's an opportunity to modernize, reduce space requirements, improve performance, and cut energy consumption. Join us on Thursday, January 31st, as we discuss the technical, financial, and operational challenges of data center consolidation with executives from NOAA, USDA, and GPO. Tune in on January 31st at noon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Thundercat Technology and NetApp.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Using steroids, losing memory. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. So where did you leave the steroids? For long-term users of these muscle-building drugs, this could be a real question. A lab study finds they may lose some ability to remember shapes, such as faces, and where things are, such as directions and objects and locations. Researcher Harrison Pope of Harvard-affiliated McLean Hospital tested 44 steroid users, 31 of whom used steroids for an average of 7 years. If you think of visuospatial memory test scores like an IQ score, with 100 being normal, users lost about 1.5 points a year.
If you had had 10 years of exposure to steroids, this would drop your score on this test to an 85.
The study in the journal Drug and Alcohol Dependence was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Mika Cross is the Work-Life and Wellness Program Manager at the Department of Agriculture. My guest today talking about top three priorities for telework at USDA for 2013. And one of your priorities is to focus on telework for coop and cog effectiveness is what you write. Now, coop planning has been the one of the major pushes behind telework for a long time. And in fact, we even see that, especially now with the way that Director Barry has changed the way that closures in the federal government will be presented. People, telework is written right into how they are going to express that the federal government is closed, that the buildings at least are closed for business. What have you seen as far as adaption and willingness of people to work and compliance and so forth when it comes especially to coop planning?
Well, we've seen a lot of miscommunication and misinformation and misunderstanding, quite frankly, which is why I listed that as top two for our priorities at USDA this year. Really, you know, what we talk about at the department is that we have to be flexible and understanding that this is an evolving concept of how and where we work. And so the policy sometimes is slow when catching up to what's going into practice. So we have a lot of conversations and initiatives to help communicate this concept of what I call a shared responsibility between managers and, of course, employees. And so helping folks to understand that now with the new guidance for area closures and dismissals, if you're considered telework ready, which for us means that you're eligible and you have an approved agreement in place, then the expectation is going to be that you continue working. And it's not just for those of us in the D.C. area. Plenty of times, I'm from Maine, and I know the state and county offices at USDA in Maine often have ice storms and other inclement weather that really could be treacherous and hazardous. And so in the past, they would close the federal government buildings in anticipation of these storms that come through. Well, now with the use of telework, our folks can continue working, even if work means to complete mandatory annual training or professional development reading and benchmarking, because not all of our positions, of course, are suitable for regular and recurring telework. We're not all knowledge workers. We have a lot of field workers that are out there servicing the American public.
One of the things that I saw in some of the data that you supplied was that 74% of the positions in your agency are eligible for telework. Do you have a sense of how many people that is? How much of a percentage of the actual number of workers that you have are eligible to telework?
Now, it varies from month to month, and I did mention that we have a monthly metrics that we keep. Mm-hmm. So it usually hovers between 68,000 and 77,000 employees department-wide, and that's in every facet of our mission areas and agencies, our functions and positions. So it is really an enormous number of USTA employees who are, in fact, eligible.
As I look at the breakdowns, I see the 38% of your employees telework, 62% don't, and that might not seem to folks looking on the from the outside in very impressive from the beginning, but I see here 24% of your employees don't telework because they have to be on the job. Their positions don't permit it. Or 20% of the employees choose not to, so it's not the agency saying you can't do it. It's the employee who's decided I need to, for whatever reason, to satisfy myself, show up in the office every day. That 20%, how do you get through to them that you can do this and this will work? It's not going to hurt your career, because I imagine that's probably the number one point of resistance. Now, I want to be there because I want to make sure my boss sees my face every day.
Yeah, that's a really good point you bring up, and it's one that I speak quite frequently with regards to the telework coordinators that manage it for the individual agencies. I mean, we have a high number of voluntary opt-outs is what we call them, and these are people that otherwise would be eligible to participate, but they just simply choose not to. What we found is that many of them either don't have a suitable place where they consider able to effectively work, and you know, that's reasonable, or they simply feel like it would be detrimental for them not to be physically present on the job. And that's where we're really targeting those conversations, as I mentioned, through our online webinars, our monthly communications and newsletters, and examples through other testimonials and stories from folks that are doing it too in their same profession and field really come into play as being important to overcome that challenge. Our telework coordinators are really trying to communicate the message that even if you feel as though you don't want to participate in telework, why not at least apply for ad hoc or situational telework? That way you have the choice if and when there's an unscheduled event that would call for or be suitable for telework. Because without an agreement in place, those 20% of employees who otherwise could be working really can't, according to the law.
One of your numbers that jumped out at me because of something that a buddy of mine told me a long time ago. He said, we were talking about people liking things and not liking things and the strange things that people liked and didn't like. And he said there will be 10% of the people in the United States that don't like free food, and I love free food. So that 10% number stuck in my head when I was looking at this number where only 9% of your teleworking employees are dissatisfied with their telework experience. That number came back into mind because you're probably always going to have a certain amount of people that no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to satisfy. So that struck me as a pretty impressive number.
The 9%?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting to find out why. Why would they be dissatisfied? A lot of times what I've heard through our employee feedback channels is that it's retribution from coworkers. Oddly enough, that their coworkers felt as though, because remember, not every position is eligible for the same level of telework participation.
Yes.
It's dependent upon the kind of job duties that you have and what's required of you. So some of our folks are very forward facing. They need to simply be at work most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, where you have other knowledge workers who simply could be teleworking, maybe even full time. And so it's really hard for employees who are new to this concept to understand why Mary might be able to telework 3 days a week, but I'm only able to once or twice a month.
Mm-hmm. The understanding of those kinds of things, I imagine, is as important as the broader concepts of why it's good and why it's not. I mean, it sounds to me like you're having sufficient success with telework at your agency that you're beyond the telework is good conversation and kind of filtering down now into the more nuances of it.
It is. That's where we're at this year, is really trying to focus those conversations also at, as I mentioned before, the state and county level so that we can drill down and find what's important. Because, you know, inclement weather season in the wintertime isn't going to be the same for someone in Texas as it is in Minnesota. So we need to make sure that we are customizing the information such that it resonates with their business line in practice and really aligns as a strategic management tool for how they implement business. And that's why it's so important to emphasize the focus on COOP and COG and practicing those drills, especially for a workforce who may not otherwise be eligible to participate in regularly scheduled telework, maybe just situational, having those practice drills are going to be extremely important when and if there is an emergency situation that they might not otherwise think could happen, and it does, to continue our operations, continue our mission, and continue the efficiency of the government.
All right, Mika, you use a term in your third priority that I want to ask you about when we come back, and we'll talk about that in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Mika Cross of the Agriculture Department's my guest, and we're back in a moment.
If you raise high the buff in blue, now's your chance to win prizes for showing your commitment to the Colonials. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now and start earning points for your likes, retweets, shares, check-ins, and more with GW Athletics content from GWSports.com and social media properties. Registration is free, and you can win special fan experiences, ticket upgrades, and buff in blue gear. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Mika Cross of the Agriculture Department here. And we are talking about the agency's top three priorities for telework for 2013. And the third one includes a phrase that I think is particularly insightful. The third priority is increased routine telework and full-time telework virtual work arrangements to meet strategic human capital goals and objectives. And Mika, the term in there that I think is particularly interesting is routine telework. It is one that I haven't heard a lot yet across government. And it strikes me that as I read more about what you're writing about, it is this is really something that is woven into the way the agency does business now. This is not just something that's added on because somebody either inside or outside the agency has decided, oh, this probably be a good idea, we should do this.
It is. And at USDA, we have two types of telework. Our routine telework is what we call core, so it's regularly scheduled telework, a minimum of 1 day per pay period, all the way up to even a full-time telework arrangement. And we have very aggressive goals for participation with regards to meeting routine telework across the department. We also have what's called ad hoc or situational, and that's more suitable for our positions that require daily face-to-face interaction with customers or access to specialized equipment that they can't necessarily take to an alternate work site, maybe access to classified information or materials that really just can't be transported in an alternate work site environment. And the focus really is on having the majority of our eligible workforce on a core, which means a regularly scheduled routine telework arrangement. What we found across the government, though, is that it's in those arrangements that you really start seeing return on investment. Because when you have scheduled telework in place, you can start thinking strategically about how to consolidate space utilization, reduction of utility costs, and again, at transit subsidies, among other cost benefits that you can realize through a structured, regularly scheduled scheduled routine telework program.
Now, I've seen the General Services Administration's model in action at their headquarters, the hoteling concept that they've set up. And it strikes me that this, if you know, you have a predictability about when people are going to be at a location, when they're not going to be, that an agency like USDA can leverage that as well.
Absolutely. And that's what we're looking at right now. Our Forest Service Washington headquarters area at the Yates Building is actually undergoing a renovation. They expect to be in by the end of the year. And we've consulted with GSA and IRS as models for how we're going to put together mobile workstations for our frequent teleworkers as well. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Now, when you talk about connecting teleworkers, you did in this priority, to strategic human capital goals, tell me what that means and tell me how you do that weaving, that embedding into the policies and procedures of the agency.
Absolutely. At USDA, we have ensured there's a synergy between our strategic recruitment plans, our disability hiring, our military and veterans hiring programs, and telework and workplace flexibilities. So they're embedded into the strategic goals and objectives in each of those program areas. And the result is that we really have been able to combine marketing and outreach about USDA's flexible and modern workplace to recruit people with targeted disabilities, to attract our returning military veterans, and ensure that we're a diverse and inclusive workforce, one that's really representative of America. And I think that's where we get our leverage as well.
You write, flexible workplace arrangements, telework will increase the effective recruitment and retention of people with disabilities, military veterans, and skilled graduates. Is the appeal to each of those groups the same, or is there kind of a different pitch, I guess, to each of those groups as to why telework and virtual work arrangements would be appealing and why the agency would be an appealing place because of them?
Certainly there's some common soft benefits, but really the appeal is different amongst those different demographics. And what we've also found, as a human capital strategic tool, is that it really works for retention as well. So we've seen a lot of our workforce that is eligible for retirement choose to opt into flexible work schedules and a combination of telework, even full-time telework arrangements. And so they've chosen not to take the early buyouts and remain with the organization, which really helps to kind of transfer that knowledge as well to our new level of Fed workers.
Yeah, that's something else that you wrote in this priority is that knowledge management piece. And that is something else that agencies are struggling with across government as these people retire, capturing that knowledge and transferring it either to the institution or to the people who will be doing those same kinds of jobs, replacing the folks that are leaving the agency. How have you seen that be effective?
So I've seen some of our agencies be able to hire back reemployed annuitants using a full-time telework arrangement so that they don't have to pay travel costs or relocate the employee that otherwise would have wanted to retire and stay wherever they were. And the benefit in that is that they're able to still contribute to the organization, transfer that knowledge, serve as mentors, and really help shape some important initiatives that will last after, in fact, they do go ahead and retire.
Yeah, it seems to me the big appeal for retiree would just be helping to eliminate the hassle factor. I don't have to schlep into work X number of days a week.
Absolutely. And in fact, on my team in particular, I have an employee that teleworks full-time from Tennessee. Now we transferred her official duty station there, and she's amazing. She had 25-plus years with USDA, labor experience. I mean, it's completely invaluable. She wanted to move and relocate. She was really intending to take an early buyout retirement. Instead, she's now working from Tennessee. It also saves the government money on locality. So think about the fact that she's getting rest of U.S. locality pay versus Washington, D.C. area locality.
And that concept is really interesting to me because I wonder how easy or difficult it is to think of all of those unintended consequences. Because when we talk about unintended consequences, normally it's in the negative sense. Mm-hmm. When you talk about it in that respect, that's a very positive way. You quite frankly, you're just paying her less money than you would have paid her had she stayed in the D.C. area.
At least 10% less.
Yeah. And so, that again, when you think about it in the case of one employee, as we talked about earlier in the hour, it's not that impressive. When you scale it out over over an entire agency or over the entire government, it gets pretty significant. Is there a way to kind of think through all of those and strategize everything? Or as you go through some of these processes, do you realize, oh, we didn't know that was going to be an extra side benefit?
I think that's probably more so the case, but also, you know, following suit of those who have done so for years ahead of us. So really benchmarking federal organizations who have done this well and been able to quantify those results, such as, you know, the USPTO Patent and Trademark Office, FDIC, of course, GSA, has really been helpful. And I think using those organizations who have been so successful and demonstrating that success as a model and template for what we're doing is really wise. And, you know, OPM's working really hard on leveraging best practices across the federal government as well. So, for instance, USTA is a part of their Telework Advisory Board Committee, and we meet monthly or sometimes even more frequently to kind of define these sorts of benefits that all agencies and departments can benefit from.
Now, you write under this priority of increased routine telework and full-time telework that more employees are requesting it. Does that mean, do you think, that you're doing a better job at portraying it, or what do you think that means, I guess?
Well, certainly, you know, it's being marketed well at USDA. The word is out. The problem, though, comes in a concept of entitlement. And so, again, I want to fall back on that concept of shared responsibility, because it's really about educating folks that, you know, it's not just that you're eligible and now you can have a pie-in-the-sky telework arrangement. It really is contingent on the needs of the mission, the kind of work that you perform, and the fact that it's not a one-size-all approach. So what work arrangement works well for you might not work well for your coworker that sits right next to you, because they have a different job and different duty requirements.
We just have a couple of minutes left, Mika, and I want to, when we come back, I want to ask you about something that you're doing, that you're positioning as something that other agencies can use as a model. We'll talk about that to finish up our conversation today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Mika Cross is Work Life and Wellness Program Manager at the Agriculture Department. We'll wrap up in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
For P150, P150 GA, P150 OK, P150 TN, C250E, C250Q.
Whoever came up with the saying, put your money where your mouth is, must have had some dental work done. Just a filling can cost over $100, and other procedures like crowns and root canals can cost you hundreds more. Without dental insurance, you could be putting a lot of money where your mouth is. But now you can get dental insurance for less than a dollar a day. This isn't a discount plan. This is real dental insurance for over 300 covered procedures. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. For details, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-200-0885. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies. Even if you're retired, you can see any dentist you choose and never have to pay a deductible. Get the coverage you need for less than a dollar a day and put less money where your mouth is. For free information, call now, 1-800-200-0885. 1-800-200-0885.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
Enjoy the comedy of Emmy Award-winning Dana Carvey and dance the night away to the sounds of Jim Belushi and the Sacred Hearts at the 26th Annual Leukemia Ball. It's presented by Bio in partnership with Genentech, Saturday, March 23rd. Take part in a fabulous auction and a chance to win one of two Mercedes-Benz. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser supports the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's critical research and patient services programs.
For sponsorship opportunities or to purchase raffle tickets, visit leukemiaball.org.
Join Affirm for a robust discussion of the looming financial issues and the 113th Congress over lunch, February 14th at the Washington Plaza Hotel. Congressman Jerry Connolly and Jim Moran of Virginia are advocates for the IT sector, and they'll talk about the fiscal cliff and debt limit, the continuing resolution, and sequestration. You'll also hear about the latest thinking on defense spending, insights on a new cyber bill, healthcare spending, government procurement reform, and other pressing issues. Register today for Affirm's monthly luncheon on the 113th Congress, February 14th at affirm.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Mika Cross of the Agriculture Department, my guest, talking about telework at her agency. And one of the things that you are doing at USDA that you're positioning as a model for telework programs across government is something called Turbocharge Telework. Tell me about this program and why you think it is something that other agencies could pick up on and use the way that you're using it at USDA.
Well, Turbocharge Telework is a really interesting concept. First and foremost, though, it has high-level sponsorship and visibility. So we have endorsements all the way up from the Secretary of Agriculture to our Assistant Secretary for Administration to our Chief Human Capital Officer. They all help to promote this program in various ways. It really hinges on three different components. So there's a policy component, which there are constant updates to. We have email and outreach campaigns to include articles in our monthly newsletter for cultural transformation, as well as monthly email blasts called Turbocharge Telework at USDA for the month of January, let's say. Involvement in National Telework Week through the Telework Exchange each and every year. And one other component, which we found highly successful, which is the monthly webinar online campaign entitled Let's Talk Telework. It's really a venue to just have an informal conversation, just like we're having today, with managers, senior level leaders, as well as employees on very focused topics dealing with the USDA telework policy. And folks feel as though it's a safe haven for them to ask questions, dispel myths, and really unearth those areas of resistance that we found have been hindrances in implementation of telework at USDA.
You mentioned earlier in the program that there are misunderstandings, misconceptions about telework. What are some of the biggest ones that still linger out there?
Let me think about that. So I have a little document called Our Top Telework Myths. So here's a couple of them. You know, telework provides no benefit to the agency. It's just a soft sell, nice to have. That's one of the biggest myths that we hear, at least on the part of the perception of employees when it comes to management resistance. Telework doesn't help employees with work-life balance, and that other people have to pick up the slack when they're out, you know, out of the office or out of sight. Out of mind, our teleworkers might feel that if they're out of the line of sight, they're not going to get high-level priority projects, tasks, visibilities that's necessary for career and upward mobility. That's a big myth at USDA. And that non-teleworkers are negatively impacted by teleworkers. So that myth that if the teleworkers aren't there, they're not working, but that's just simply not the case. And so those are some of our top myths that we try to combat.
And there's a whole lot more that we could cover, Mika. We appreciate you being here today on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can hear the entire conversation posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And the second hour of In Depth with Francis Rose coming in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.